Think Geek is shutting down, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe and follow button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest news. And if you're new here, hold off on that like button if you're watching a video until you get to a portion of the show that you actually like. Now, I know there's some news that we'll be announcing today that might not be like-worthy, but maybe like for the content instead of sad news of it, or I don't, or just agree with the news that yes, it is sad, and we'll be much better off because of it. Speaking of which, main story today is ThinkGeek shutting down. We'll also be taking a look at Facebook creating photorealistic homes for AIs to work in and learn. And finally, we'll be taking a look at John Wick Hex proves that licensed games don't have to suck. And you might be wondering, why are there only three articles today? Well, because today is a Friday night special, or a Friday episode special edition episode something. I still haven't figured out the proper name to call it. You guys, help me out in the comment section. Maybe what I should call the shortened Friday version of the show. This only happens every other Friday or so. I usually have scheduling conflicts, so I can't do a full show like I would like to, so I have to shorten it to a shorter episode and do shorter things. So maybe the shortened edition version. So anyways, so let me know down in the comment section. And also, being that it's shortened, we have no did you know stuff to cover today. We'll just hop right into the show. Are you ready? Here we go. All right, being that today is June 14th, 2019, on this day in history, Charles Babbage unveils his design for a machine he called the Difference Engine in 1822. It was the first example of a mechanical computing machine. The British government funded the building of a Difference Engine, which Babbage never actually completed. However, Babbage's design for the Difference Engine and his later analytical engine spurred future designs of working mechanical computers. So glad we got out of mechanical computers. That would have been weird. In 1991, a working Difference Engine was constructed using Babbage's plans, proving that his designs would have worked. However, like I said, who wants a machine, like parts and stuff all moving inside? I like the computers that we have today, don't you? Also, on this day in history, in 1941, John Mauchly arrived in Iowa City for a visit with John Atanasoff to see his computer. The two computer pioneers later found themselves in a court battle over who would be deemed the, quote, legal inventor of the electronic digital computer. Atanasoff emerged from the long and tangled legal battle, jeez, a tongue-tied tube on top of that, as the victor, after Honeywell Inc. charged Sperry Rand Corp. with enforcement of a fraudulent patent. During the course of the trial, Atanasoff's work emerged, and a judge determined that his work had proceeded and contributed to development of the ENIAC computer. Also, on this day in 1956, the U.S. Census Bureau dedicated its first UNIVAC computer and experienced its first programming error. Once the bugs were fixed, the UNIVAC 1 became the first commercial computer to attract widespread public attention. Good news being that Remington Rand eventually sold 46 machines at more than $1 million each. Back in the day, that was huge, further solidifying the importance of computers and moving on to bigger and better things. So, with that out of the way, let's head on over to our feature story. Well, ThinkGeek.com is shutting down. Now, this might be news to some of you, might not be news to some of you. Some of you might have said, I've seen something like this coming, and some of you might say, what the heck is ThinkGeek.com? Well, if you're a geek or a nerd, well, more geek in this frame of explanation, and you like buying cool, geeky stuff, geeky products, things of that nature, like wide variety of stuff, ThinkGeek.com was the place to go to to buy it. They came out with all different types of merch, not only t-shirt designs that they switched up all the time, like beanbag chair type options, coffee cup type options, and then just like the little oddity here and there that really like you couldn't find anywhere else. Well, then after they'd been around for a while, GameSpot came along and went, "Hey, we like what you guys are doing there," and bought them. And they said, "Okay, what are you guys going to do with us?" And GameSpot said, "Oh, nothing. Just keep doing your thing." Well, after 20 years of serving the nerds of the internet with a wide variety of geek-related merchandise, ThinkGeek will officially close down its website and will migrate its operations over to its parent company GameStop's website instead. In the meantime, the store is holding a 50% off moving sale. So, speaking of which, if you guys are interested right now, up until July 2nd, I believe, the website will still be active. The 50% off sale will be in place. So if there's any final purchases you want to make, if this is the first time you actually want to go take a look at something, take a look at something, make a quick decision within the next couple of weeks if you want to purchase anything, and go ahead and make your final purchases. This is kind of like once it's gone kind of thing. And half off is half off. So if it's a good deal for you guys, figure out what you want to get and jump on it now. By way of explanation, a GameStop spokesperson would only provide the following business speak. The company is engaging in a strategic business transformation initiative to build the GameStop of the future. And as part of that effort, we have made the decision to reorganize our ThinkGeek business by streamlining the operations of our ThinkGeek.com e-commerce platform and transitioning it within our GameStop.com omni-channel platform. That's essentially speak for saying GameStop's sales are kind of sinking rapidly right now. I can't figure out what the heck to do. All these digital downloads seem to really be eating away at our bottom line. Oh, but they come to GameStop to buy merchandise. Maybe we should do something. We own ThinkGeek.com. Why don't we put our merch? It's our merch. Why don't we just close down ThinkGeek and transition it into the bubble that is GameStop, and then people can come to the store for the merchandise. I see this coming. I saw this coming. As soon as I could tell GameStop was doing great selling merchandise, and good merchandise at that, too. Not saying that it was a bad thing. Obviously, digital downloads are going to start becoming more and more and more and more of a thing. And seeing that's how we're going to start playing games from the cloud, I think GameStop is seriously concerned, and rightly so. So, but I don't like the way that they decided to go and take it, which was, we're just going to take ThinkGeek, suck it up into our corporate entity, and then we're just going to spit it out throughout GameStop, or our website, all of our stores, and then the merchandise. Yeah. So what are you going to do with the brand now? That's what I want to know. So, what essentially boils down to is the company is consolidating under one brand name. According to the company's customer service page, the ThinkGeek site will shut down on July 2nd, after which you'll be able to ship a curated selection of unique items historically found on ThinkGeek.com via a ThinkGeek section at GameStop. The company also says that it will keep its 40-plus physical retail locations around the country open, and that ThinkGeek items will also be available in the company's chain of GameStop stores. And in case you're wondering, here's the official tweet from ThinkGeek proper. On one hand, it makes sense. Operating multiple similar brands and their supporting organizations is kind of complicated. When GameStop acquired ThinkGeek back in 2015, it noted that it wanted to expand its offerings in a fast-growing collectibles category. And sure enough, you could soon find all sorts of knickknacks at your local GameStop store that were previously only available online. But for all the cold logic that justifies GameStop's decision, I can't help but think that it's a real loss. That's not me talking, that's the author who wrote this article speaking. By the way, if you want the link to the articles mentioned in today's show, head on over to technewsgadget.net. Continuing, ThinkGeek has always been a delightful place to shop for the spectrum of geek-minded people, from the hardcore fans to the befuddled families of those who like things like Star Trek and Dungeons & Dragons. The site always maintains a whimsical meta-nature for the larger geek world and internet fandom. Want an oven mitt that looks like a wampa paw? Check. How about a bowl shaped like a shark? Still giggle every time you fill it with goldfish crackers. TARDIS bathrobe? Yep. That's to say nothing of the company's annual April Fool's Day prank products, outrageous stunts that no rational company would devote a ton of energy and resources to undertaking, even when everyone is in on the joke. Like a Tauntaun sleeping bag. Now, whatever GameStop determines will remain of the brand will get wedged amongst the shelves loaded down with Funko Pops, action figures, and racks of video games. Hopefully GameStop will manage to bring some of Think Geek's playful whimsy to, but it's sad nonetheless. But now you've heard the article's thoughts, you've heard my thoughts on it. Now the real question is, do you think this is a good move for GameStop to do? Should they have not done it? What do you think? Are you a fan of Think Geek? Are you not? Haven't heard of them? I'd love to hear your comments. I'd love to continue the conversation right here in the comment section on YouTube if you're watching the video. So please, let us know down in the comment section. We can connect. We can talk. We can hang out. We can chat and reminisce, as it were, the loss of Think Geek. Except it's smushed up into GameStop now, and GameStop's still trying to figure out how to brand itself. Moving forward, obviously. So, there you go. Moving on. Alright. Facebook is creating photorealistic homes for AIs to work and learn in. Now, if AI-powered robots are ever going to help us out around the house, they're going to need a lot of experience navigating human environments. Simulators, virtual worlds that look and behave just like real life are the best place for them to learn, and Facebook has created one of the most advanced such systems yet. You know what? As I'm reading this article, I can't think of this being, one of Star Trek's holodecks. I don't know why it's reminiscing me of that, because you take the AI and you're like, hey, could you generate a holodeck on deck 5? And it goes, oh, okay, boop! Called Habitat, Facebook's new open source simulator was briefly mentioned some months ago, but today received a full expository treatment to accompany a paper on the system being presented at CVPR. Teaching a robot to navigate a realistic world and accomplish simple tasks is a process that takes a considerable amount of time, so doing it in a physical space with an actual robot is kind of impractical. It might take hundreds of hours, even years of real time, to learn over many repetitions how best to get from one place to another or how to grip and pull a drawer. Well, instead, the robot's AI can be placed in a virtual environment that approximates the real one, and the basics can be hashed out as fast as the computer can run the calculations that govern that 3D world. Much simpler. That means you can achieve hundreds or thousands of hours of training in just a few minutes of intense computing time. No. And I know what you're thinking. What does that mean? I could take a chip, pop it in the back of my head, and learn how to do a ninja karate kickflips and everything? And it's not, no, I can tell you exactly going along with the Matrix things too. Well, that means that's just giving the robots the reason to go want to plug us all into the Matrix system, dude, and control our brains and like harvest resources and stuff. Oh my goodness. The robots are only as smart as the people who program them. It's never going to go out beyond that. Ay, ay, ay. Now, keep in mind, Habitat is not itself a virtual world, but rather a platform on which such simulated environments can run. It is compatible with several existing systems and environments, and is optimized for efficiency, so researchers can run it at hundreds of times real-world speeds. But Facebook's also wanted to advance the state-of-the-art in virtual worlds, and so created a replica, a database for Habitat that includes a number of photorealistic rooms organized into a whole house. A kitchen, bathroom, doors, living room with couches, everything. It was created by Facebook's Reality Labs and is a result of painstaking photography and depth mapping of real environments. And here we have one photo of such. Looks pretty good. Look at that. There's one photo. Completely computer generated. Here's another one. And here's a third. So, just in case you're wondering, hey, were you just clicking on something? Were you looking at photos? Yeah, if you're listening to the podcast, you're totally missing out. Head on over to youtube.com/technewsgadget. The detail with which these are recreated is pretty high, but you may notice some artifacts, especially along ceilings and inaccessible edges. Those areas aren't a focus, probably because AI vision agents don't rely on detail in ceilings and distant corners for navigation. Shapes like chairs and tables, or the way the walls define a hallway, are much more important. Even more important, however, are the myriad annotations the team has done on the 3D data. It's not enough to simply capture the 3D environment. The objects and surfaces must be consistently and exhaustively labeled. That's not just a couch. It's a gray couch with blue pillows, and depending on the logic of the agent, it might or might not know that the couch is soft, that it's on top of a rug, or that it's by the TV, and so on. And see, here's a habitat and replica represented with a single color per semantic label, but including labels like this increases the flexibility of the environment, and a comprehensive API and task language allows agents to perform complex, multi-step problems like, go to the kitchen and tell me what color the vase is on the table. After all, if these assistants are meant to help out, say, a disabled person who can't easily get around their home, they'll have to be savvy a little bit. Habitat and Replica are meant to help create that savvy and give the agents the practice they need. Now, despite its advances, Habitat is only a small step along the road to truly realistic simulator environments. For one thing, the agents themselves aren't rendered realistically. A robot might be tall or small, have wheels or legs, use depth cameras or RGB. Some logic won't change. Your size doesn't influence the distance from the couch to the kitchen, but some will. A small robot might be able to walk under a table or be unable to see what's on top of it. So, wide variety of new problems to obviously present itself in many different visualized vision systems and situations. So, yeah, obviously, however, there's a need for both, and it seems that for now, one can't be without the other. Simulators can be either physically or visually realistic, but not both. No doubt Facebook and others in AI research are hard at work creating one that can, and I, for one, am looking forward to see what advances it can make. So, there you go. That's that. And finally, we got some gaming news for you guys today. Well, we got to take a little bit more of a look at John Wick Hex, and I gotta say, now that I had a chance to see a little bit more, I'm actually kind of excited for this game. Now, when envisioning a John Wick video game, most people's minds would probably jump to a traditional shooter. The film franchise is based around a retired assassin gunning thugs down and punching others in the throat. So some kind of third-person cover shooter might fit the bill here. That would be a bit too easy, though. It would also allow for players to turn John Wick himself into a bumbling idiot with their failures. And that's what first struck indie developer Mike Bithell. A huge fan of the films, his ideal John Wick game was something that would allow players to execute missions with the precision and finesse that Keanu Reeves brought to the mysterious killer. While John Wick is still human, he rarely misses his shots and never looks like a fool when tearing through henchmen. He's always cool, collected, calculated, and deadly. Now, if not a shooter, what kind of genre would fit John Wick's style? Well, why not something along the lines of XCOM? You could turn mixed base strategy with real-time elements, let players have a selection of options for how to deal with individual moments, relay data that's an approximation of what would be going on through John's head, and have enough of a hands-off approach that players can't unintentionally make John look stupid. And that's basically how Bithell explained his vision to his producer right after seeing a really bad action film. Bithell is a huge fan of John Wick, and who isn't? Well, except for me, I haven't seen it. And ever since seeing it, can't seem to stop comparing the other action films to what, well, John Wick films have created. What Bithell didn't know is that his producer was involved with Lionsgate Games and was fishing out pitches for a possible game adaptation. After hearing what he had in mind, he asked him to create a prototype and send it over for consideration. And if you couldn't guess by the existence of John Wick Hex, Lionsgate loved it. This wasn't some cheap cash-in, but a project with real passion and an understanding of what made the film such a beloved series in the first place. John Wick might put action first, but it doesn't stoop to the levels of B-movies or sloppy editing to convey its message. John Wick Hex, in turn, doesn't stoop to taking the easier route for adapting a movie to a video game. And after chatting about how it came to be, Mike Bithell gave a tour of the various different systems that make Hex work. Taking place on a hex grid, players can move John around almost as if playing chess. He can walk about 5 steps forward before the action pauses and requires another decision. While some initial prototypes had everything working in real time, Playtesting showed that players then inched their way through levels in a manner the exact opposite of how John would approach situations. The main objective in every level is to reach the exit and proceed to the next area. Ultimately, John is on a mission to assassinate someone, and players are navigating through various areas to reach his target. Since no target is worth killing in the John Wick universe is unguarded, random thugs will populate these levels and necessitate that you eliminate them. You won't be able to spot them all at once. A fog of war is in effect here, so you'll need to consider your options when making progress towards the goal. Now we get into the real nitty-gritty of how Hex plays. So, I'll stop right there. I'm not going to continue on any further, but, man, this article goes in. You know, you have to figure out drop-down menu, what choices you'll take, a focus meter that recharges, but you have to be smart about how you use it. It gets really complex really quickly, but it seems to do it gradually. Like, you learn your way into the system, and it's a super simple system to learn how to play it. And if you're really one of those kind of people who like chess, who like more XCOM genre-style games, you're really going to enjoy this game. And after reading this article, I know I was starting to, like, definitely enjoy it. Like, I have to be specific, precise, cool, calm, collected, and everything. Because if I mess up and I happen to hit the focus button at the wrong time because I got punched in the face, well, focus time is going to take time away from me, and then the other enemy can react and shoot me, and then I'm dead. And I got to do the whole level all over again. So, yeah, it's pretty in-depth. So if you want to read that, this is an article on Destructoid. So links will be in the show notes for today's episode that you can find over at technewsgadget.net. And with that, that wraps up this episode of the latest in tech news. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes will be not this coming Monday, but the Monday after. Remember, I'm going on vacation next week, so I will be gone the entire week. But the week after that, which is the last week of June, I will be back in the studio, continuing on as normal. No more vacations coming up for quite a while, so I should be able to give you your fill. By the way, if I happen to miss anything that you wanted to see covered in a show, let me know down in the comments section. Love to hear your thoughts. The latest in tech news can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and leaving a comment. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. Hint, hint. Ring those bells. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.